So when I was in high school, I had a friend whose dad was into World War II documentaries. So whenever I went to his house, his dad would be on the couch watching these old black and white footages from World War II, right? And I couldn't think of anything more boring than that. I could not understand why a human being would sit there and watch, you know, these documentaries, right? Now that I am his age, guess what I find myself doing? Same thing. I'm sitting on my couch watching old black and white, World War II documentaries. Now, why do I do that? Is it because it's educational? No, it's because I actually like it. Just like, right, teenage girls like, you know, K-pop MVs, right? Or boys like working out and becoming buff. I like watching these old World War II documentaries. And the reason is this. When I'm watching these documentaries and when I see, right, visually and hear their stories on what they have gone through, all these soldiers and their families, what they have gone through, and I look at my life and I realize that compared to them, whatever miseries that I might be going through, it's really nothing in comparison, right? Because, I mean, imagine a mom hearing a knock on the door, and then there's an officer who tells them that your son had been killed in the action. Compared to that, anything that I go through in ministry and in life is nothing. And so I almost get this relief from watching these old World War II documentaries and just seeing what those people have gone through and are going through, right? Now, there was a young man by the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer who lived during World War II who wrote a book titled The Cost of Discipleship. And in it, he says this, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. When Christ comes and he calls us, basically what he's telling us is, hey, come, follow me to die. Now, this was a German theologian, a solid Christian, who was offered a job to teach at an American seminary that guaranteed him a salary and safety. And so he was even invited to, I believe, New York City. And hey, as long as you stay here, right, you can teach at our seminary and we'll give you a good salary because he was a brilliant theologian. But this German theologian decided to go back home while the war was going on and knowing fully well that Germany might fall and Hitler might conquer the world, right? He went back and then he actually opposed and he dissented and then he was discovered opposing Hitler and then he was executed just weeks before the war ended. He lived what he preached, but he paid for it with his life. So let me further quote him. He says something about cheap grace and costly grace. Okay, I believe churches really need to hear this. He says about... I can't lower it. Yeah, sorry. Cheap grace is a preaching of forgiveness without requiring repentance. Baptism without church discipline. Communion without confession, absolution, that's forgiveness without personal confession. And cheap grace is grace without discipleship, grace without the cross, grace without Jesus Christ living and incarnate. And then he says something about costly grace, the true grace. Costly grace is a treasure hidden in the field. For the sake of it, a man will go and sell all that he has. It is a pearl of great price to buy, which the merchant will sell all his goods. It is a kingly rule of Christ, for whose sake a man will pluck out the eye, which causes him to stumble. It is the call of Jesus Christ at which the disciples leaves his nets and follows him. I no longer say grace is free. I no longer say salvation is free. You know what I say instead? It's priceless. It's priceless. Because when we say free, we confuse it with being cheap, right? We think cheap. But no, grace is not cheap. It is costly, right? It costs the Son of God his life. And it is costly for us to receive. Yes, it is free. It's given to us. We cannot earn it. But once we receive it, for it to work out its effect in us, it's going to cost us our earthly lives as well. So in that sense, it's priceless because God is giving us himself. So I'll keep my message really simple. We are on Unit 8, that's out of 12, of the Experiencing God series. And it is titled, Adjusting Your Life to God. Okay, Adjusting Your Life to God. Last week, the message was about the crisis of belief that we ran into as we discovered God's will. In other words, if you're trying to follow God's will, you'll come in a fork on the road, right? Fork at the road. You're going to have to either choose, I'm going to still go continue my way, or you're going to have to choose God's way that is very distinct from your way. And if you choose to go God's way, then you are going to have to make certain sacrifices or certain adjustments in your life. And that's what is making it the crisis, right? Because if you continue to go your way, then you don't have to make any adjustments, and you know exactly where you're going to end up, so you're comfortable with it. However, if you decide to go God's way, then you have no idea what you're running into, because God may tell you to move to Africa for all you know, and you don't want to go there. You don't know. It's a fear of the unknown, just like right now, right? Why are we so fearful? You know, this hit me on the way to church today. There are more people in the gym than in the churches. I went to Planet Fitness just 2 days ago, and it was filled with people. I went to Costco, and it was filled with at least 500 people probably in there at the same time, right? People are buying everything up, right? Rice, gone. Water, gone. Hand sanitizers, everything is gone, right? Because we don't know what's going to happen. Fear of the unknown. And I think it's the same thing when we are trying to choose God's will. We don't want to go that way because we don't know what God's going to tell us. But we know our will. We know what we want. And so we said last week that if you are to follow God's will, you're going to run into what's called a crisis of belief. And today, what I want to go is that if you have overcome that crisis of belief and you have decided that I want God's will more than my will, I'm going to warn you, this is what's going to happen to you, okay? So we don't believe in easy believism here at As One. Just get over it, right? Everything will work out fine, and then we'll tell you the hard stuff later on. No, we want to lay it out before you even make the decision. Three things I want to share with you. First of all, you cannot stay where you are and go with God at the same time. Number two, obedience is costly to you and to those around you. And three, obedience requires total dependence on God to work through you. And I am going to refer to the Apostle Paul and Peter to illustrate these three points. Okay? Number one, you cannot stay where you are and go with God at the same time. Listen, God does not exist to bless you in what you want to do, primarily. Even if it is what you want to do for God, right? God does not exist to bless you in what you want to do, even if it is what you want to do for God, what you want to accomplish for God. The thing about God is that He is the absolute leader. He is the initiator. He does not follow, okay? In other words, He's the ultimate alpha male. We do not even tell Him what we would like to do for Him, okay? We simply wait for the commander's commands, and then when He gives a command, we obey. That's the kind of God that we have. He is the initiator. He is the absolute leader. Now, when we have sufficient intimacy with Him later on, I do believe that we can make a suggestion to Him as to what we would like to do for Him. There's an example of that. For example, King David has done that, right? King David said, I would like to build a temple for God, because I live in a huge mansion palace, and God is still in a tabernacle, a tent. I would like to build Him a temple. And so he tells a prophet, and prophet says, go for it. That's a great desire. But God shows up before him and says, David, I appreciate that, but you're not going to be the one to build a temple for me. It's going to be your son who will build a temple for me. So veto, right? Again, we are learning that no, even with good intentions, what we want to do is we always want to ask God. I'm sure God was tickled to death at David's suggestion, right? Which was out of the goodness of his heart. But even that, God has to take the initiative and has to tell them what he wants them to do. Let me tell you a little bit about Paul. Apostle Paul was doing what he thought was right for God before he met Jesus. I believe he was so zealous, right? Not just to promote himself, but because he wanted to promote God. He was being a good Pharisee in order to spread the fame of God, I think, right? But he was doing it the wrong way. He was playing for the wrong country. His ladder was leaning on the wrong building. And then Jesus met him and said, "What are you doing, Paul? You're not really working for me. You're working against me." And once he realized that, he had to make adjustment. He was playing for Russia, and now he has to play for the U.S., right? Mid-Olympics. It was as if that's what happened to Paul's life. Now his enemies became his friends, and his friends became his enemies, right? And he had to make drastic adjustments to his life in order to follow the will of God. And the biblical pattern is that if we are to follow God, we have to make a major adjustment, okay, or changes to our lives. Let me give you some samples. Noah could not continue life as usual and build an ark at the same time. Abraham could not stay in Ur and father a nation there. He had to move out of his country. Moses could not stay in the desert and confront Pharaoh at the same time. Peter, Andrew, James, and John had to leave their fishing business to follow Jesus. And when God called me, right, I do not belong there, but when God called me into the ministry, my first step was to quit my job as an engineer. And the second thing was that I had to commute 3.5 hours every week for 3 years from Virginia to North Carolina. Imagine if you're going to college next year and you're having to commute to Oregon every week. That's 3.5 hours one way, right? God called me to it, and so I'll do it. And then after that, from Virginia, I moved to Washington State, when I have never been to the West Coast before in my life, okay, until then. Change the mic?
Yeah.
Okay. Hello. Is that better? Okay, we'll find out. Sorry, maybe you guys couldn't hear me. Hopefully you guys can hear me better. All right. And this is where following Jesus becomes real. As long as you can continue the lifestyle that you have always lived, there is no cost to you, right? But once you realize that God is calling you to make some major adjustments that will bring discomfort or even sacrifice, that's when you face the crisis of belief, and you must make a choice at that point. Remember, faith requires action, right? And that action involves both adjustments and obedience. So, application. If you want God's will, if you truly want it, get ready to make some major adjustments in your life, because you cannot stay where you are and go with God at the same time, right? Number two, obedience is costly to you and to those around you, okay? Obedience is costly to you and to those around you. Now, I wish I can say that once we make that adjustment to God, everything will work out great. But that's just not what the Bible promises, right? Jesus says about Paul when he called him, "I'll show him how much he must suffer for the sake of my name." So all of Paul's ministry, he was going to suffer. I mean, that was the point of his ministry, for him to suffer. Jesus called him to suffer. And this is what Paul says about his life toward the end of his life in Acts 9. He said, 2 Corinthians. "Five times I received at the hands of the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods." Have you ever been beaten with rods before? I have in Korea, but on my buttocks, right? It hurt like crazy, right? But not on my back, not on my head, right? "Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I was adrift at sea. In toil, in hardship, through many a sleepless night, in hunger, thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure." And he goes on for 3 more verses. How much he has suffered, right? For the sake of Christ. Listen, obedience is costly to you. An even better example is Jesus. Right? Obedience for him meant death on the cross. And here's the hard part. Not only is obedience costly to you, but it's also costly to those around you. That's a hard part for me to accept, because I'm a father, I have a family, I got kids, and I got aging parents. They might all be affected because of my obedience. Think of Mary, the mother of Jesus. The angel told Mary, when she was pregnant with Jesus, that her heart will be pierced with grief and sadness. And she witnessed her son die like a common criminal on the cross. And I've been told that there's no grief like losing a child. Right? And Jesus' mother, Mary, has experienced that grief. How costly was it for her because of her son's obedience? Number two, Moses. When he obeyed God and approached Pharaoh to let his people go, Pharaoh doubled the work that the Israelites were to do. And then they all started complaining to Moses. Remember that? Moses, because you spoke up, Pharaoh is making twice the work, giving us twice the work. What's up with this? And so they all suffered because of Moses' obedience. Right? It almost backfired on him. I remember a story of a Korean missionary to China that gave a testimony. He said they left a cushy life in Korea to go to China as missionaries. And they had three small children. IMB won't even send you anywhere if you have small children. But obviously, he was sent, right? And he recounted the story of how every time they came home from school, a Chinese school, that their nose, under their nose, was black with soot, right? Because of the bad air pollution there. And then almost every day that they would come home crying because they've been made fun by their friends because they couldn't speak the language, even though they look like them, Chinese, Korean, right? They look similar. But because they couldn't speak the language and because they were foreigners, they were made fun of day in and day out. And then they were begging their father, can we go home, please? Can we go back to Korea, right? Can we go back to our friends and to our relatives? I can't imagine what that would be like as a father when my children are suffering like that and then asking me to, let's go home. You know what would be going through my mind at that point? What in the world? What am I doing? Right? I mean, is this really God's will? How can this be God's will when my loved ones are suffering like this? But you know what? That's biblical. Every time somebody obeyed, his loved ones or her loved ones suffered. So Jesus says, whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. What do we get in return for this cost? We get God. I don't want gold. For sacrificing my daughters and my family, I get gold? No, thank you. Right? I get God. He's the great treasure. He's the hidden treasure. Right? And with God, I get everything that comes along with God, the universe, including my loved ones, back. That's the story of Job, if you remember. Right? He lost everything, but God, right, repaid twice as good as he had it in the beginning. And so, eternal life with God and in God is what we get, even though it is costly. Number three, I'm going to keep it short. Obedience requires total dependence on God to work through you. If God is to achieve only what he can achieve, we must depend on him. We do not follow a formula. We do not follow a strategy or a carefully crafted plan. We follow a person. You know what some of the biggest mistakes a lot of church people, pastors have done? And what they have done is they read a great book called Purpose Driven Life or Purpose Driven Church Planting or Purpose Driven Church. There's a book called that. I read it. And you know what so many of the pastors try to do? They try to read that and then they try to implement it into their own church because they've seen this church in Southern California, right? And then it blew up and then they were growing like crazy and then it made a lot of sense to them and said, oh, we're going to follow the exact same thing at our church and then our church is going to blow up too, to realize that it didn't. Why? Because they were following a method. They were following a right? A plan that somebody else created. They weren't following something that God was telling them, and that's why it didn't work. He should have worked, right? I admit, right, I made those mistakes too. I went to those basic trainings and I read those church planning books, and then if you follow this method, right, if you have a critical number, if you do this, if you do that, then your church will be, you know, this growth or have this kind of, you know, revival or what have you, right? None of them worked. I admit that I'm ashamed to admit that I have followed some of them, and I realize that God is telling me, no, no. You don't follow a method. You don't follow a plan, right? You don't follow a strategy. You follow me, a person. It's a relationship. It's a relationship that matters. When Peter saw Jesus walking on the water, he said this, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Now, what a great display of faith, right? He got on the water and started walking. And then you know what happened, right? Said he started sinking. And then the Bible says, "But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, 'Lord, save me.' And Jesus reached out saying, 'Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?'" Listen, what that tells us is that not only do we need to depend on God in order to do the impossible, like walking on the water is impossible, right? So we need to depend on God to do that, but we need to continue to depend on Him to continue to do the impossible that He was doing. I think in the middle of walking on the water, I think He realized, come to His senses and thought, what am I doing? I'm walking on, I shouldn't be able to do this, right? And then he started looking around rather than fixing his eyes on Jesus, who was holding him up, who held him up in the first place that he could step on the water. So he forgot to depend on Him. So often that happens in our lives, does it not? Right? We have this, this great faith. You know, I'm going to make that decision and I'm going to do it, right? And finally we get over the hump and then we just make that decision. We make that adjustment. We make that change, or, you know, we ditch that girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, right? Or we give that tithe, you know? And then next month comes, you know, or next relationship comes and we got to do it again and do it again and realize, I don't know if I can keep on doing this, right? I know God delivered me back then, but I don't know if He's going to keep on delivering. And then we start sinking. That happens to so many of us. And it's a temptation that we have to constantly watch out for, that we don't fall into. So not only do we depend on Him to initiate or to start that journey, but we need to continue to depend on Him so that He can help us walk that supernatural walk that He wants us to walk. Do we fall? Of course, right? Like Peter did. But we come right back up and we say, "Lord, save me. Help me. Let me continue to walk on water, because without you, I can't do this." Right? Henry Blackaby says this, "The adjustment requires moving from doing work for God according to your abilities, your gifts, your likes and dislikes, and your goals to being totally dependent on God and His working and His resources. Away from you, your abilities, your goodness, right, your moral upbringings, your talents, your gifts, to Him, what He can bring about." Summing it up, you cannot stay where you are and go with God at the same time. And then obedience is costly to you and to those around you. And then obedience requires total dependence on God to work through you. And I'm going to talk more about that obedience a little bit later on next week, right? God willing. But I want to end with this. I really think God is telling our church to watch, pray, and seek God's face as to what He wants us to do. I do believe that God has a unique calling for us in this community and in this world. I do not know exactly what it is. And I've been praying. And here's what I want to ask you to do. I want you to pray with me, and I want you to pray for the will of God to be revealed to us clearly. Not only concerning your individual life, your future, but also our church's future. What do you want us to do in this community, right? what do you want us to do for the people that are living around us and you know, that belong to our church already? What shall we do for the unbelievers that are in our right immediate vicinity? What are you calling us to do? Why did you put us here? What are you already doing, Lord, in and around us, right? Open my eyes. Let me see it. Let me join you in what you're doing. Would you be praying about that? Let me give you a challenge. I'll be fasting for the next day and a half. Normally, I fast for two meals on Tuesdays, but God convicted me to fast tomorrow and then two meals for on Tuesday, so maybe five meals, right? So I'm going to be fasting the next couple days. Would you, if you are willing, join me in that? Maybe a meal or two or three, you know, if you really want to go for the challenge, right? And all you're doing is seeking the face of God, right? God, what are you doing? Reveal to me your will, what you're doing so that I can join you. How is your kingdom being built, right? How can I glorify your name so that your name will be honored and you can honor me as well in the process, right? Because God always honors those whom he honors, right? And so would you be praying about that and take the challenge, right? A lot of you don't have school, work is, right, cut. We have a lot more time to really seek and pray. And I really believe that God is allowing this for us to humble ourselves, kneel, pray, right, and seek his face, okay? So would you do that at this point? I am not going to ask the worship team to come up here. We're just going to end the service here. So would you just spend a minute where you are, right, and, you know, you guys too, right? Let's seek the Lord, okay, at this point. And even ask God what he will convict you to do, okay, for the next week or so, right, as we seek the face of God at a time like this. Okay, so let's do that right now at this point. Let's pray.